Hellman on CliffCentral.com.
Well, I'm getting better at seeing that, Matt. Like, before I used to be like, oh, she can see that I've been eating bad food. Like, oh, she can see that, you know, I've been, my cholesterol's higher and I've been, you know, cooking in butter and all of that. But now, like, now we're comfortable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're getting better.
I think so.
And I'm so happy that we're tackling what we are today on the informed appetite, because I'm one of these people that hates cooking. I have zero interest. For me, I've never understood the logic of spending an hour preparing something and then 5 minutes in eating it. It's just, I can't, you know, maybe something will change as I get older, I become a real person, but I cannot in this space and time in my life now understand spending so much time on something that you devour in 5 minutes, which is why I like other people cooking for me, or like, you know, when they present me things to just buy, mm-hmm. and it's like, you know, a one-stop solution.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're talking about exactly that, ready-made meals and how to make better decisions when you just not can't cook, but don't want to cook, which is a growing trend, right?
Very much so. I see a lot of people who just don't want to cook, and they'll actually say, I don't cook. And so we have to say, what is cooking? Is cutting the corner of a steamed veggie bag cooking? Is, like, are you just literally going to stab it with a fork and that's it? So people don't want to cook. They don't want to spend their lives peeling vegetables. And I understand that. So I agree with you, spending an hour in the kitchen for something that you're eating in about 20 minutes, not five. You don't want to spend all that time, but it doesn't mean that you have to eat something unhealthy. You can actually outsource the cooking and get a healthy option, but we do need to be aware of what we're choosing.
Absolutely. I mean, because it's not just going through the McDonald's drive-thru. That's not what we're speaking about here at all. And it seems like, you know, people are catering more and more to this. So when we're talking about making better decisions when you can't cook, what kind of decisions are we looking at making here? And how do we judge if we're making a good decision or not?
Well, a lot of people are not going to like the answer that I've got. And the reason is because it involves a little bit of effort. And the best recommendation that I've got is actually to have a look at the label. And the reason I say this is when I was looking up different things for today to see if I just march into the store and I pick up, for example, a sandwich or a salad.
Like Woolworths are so good at this.
They're amazing at it. Like literally somebody else has chopped everything for you. It's so easy. But sometimes the options that we think are healthy are actually covered in oil. And so I was astounded. There was a tomato and cheese and basil sandwich that had almost as much energy in it as a curry. And you think it's two slices of bread with a bit of cheese and pesto. Like, how bad can it be? And really the easiest way is to learn how to read a label. And so today I actually, in preparation, tweeted out a great, great resource from a book written by two local dietitians called Fast Food for Sustained Energy. It's by Selena Rasmus and Gabby Steenkamp. And there are these, one for men and one for women, and it's just some guidelines around how much energy to have inside your meal overall.
Oh, this is fantastic.
A maximum amount of carbohydrates, maximum, or roughly how much fat you want, how much protein you want. And if you just start at the energy point on its own, that is already a great way of controlling the total amount of energy that you're getting in.
Shit, this is like a Kit Kat.
I'm glad you know that.
Oh, no. I mean, you're speaking of meals for men. 1,800 to 2,200 kilojoules, which is like a Kit Kat.
That's a little bit more than a Kit Kat.
Yeah.
But that's
like a Kit Kat chunky.
So here, a chicken pie at Woolworths is about 140 grams and about 1,600 kilojoules.
Okay.
So that's like, believe it or not, it's almost fitting within the what we want,
but then it wouldn't with the fat and the carbohydrates and the protein and the fiber.
And there's that little bottom thing that says that we also want colors from vegetables, from salads, or from fruit. And in many of these ready-made meals, there are just no veggies, so there'll be protein and there'll be often a poor carbohydrate source, so it won't be brown rice or brown pasta. It will be the whitest you can imagine. And the issue with that is that it doesn't keep you full for very long. And so you're going to eat a whole meal, but if it's very, very low in fiber, you're going to digest it very quickly, and you're going to be hungry really soon.
You know what's so misleading often is also the packaging of the frozen meals. So, like, I know I'm a sucker for that Woolworths macaroni and cheese eat thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's green. I mean, the packaging is literally green, and then, like, a really great picture of the mac and cheese. And so something subconsciously is probably happening there, telling me that, you know, this might not be that bad. But it really, really is.
Obviously, there's no veggies in there. So if you buy a heat and eat little pack of veggies to go with it, you can potentially reduce the portion by half, have leftovers for lunch the following day, and then put at least 2 fistfuls of veggies with that, and you're going to have a much more balanced meal. So the most important thing with a lot of these dishes is actually the portion size. If you're eating 4 people's dinner and going, oh, that was lovely, I just had one tray, you're going to be in trouble, even if it was a healthy dinner. So sometimes it's a positive thing if you've got these really small portions, like they do some slimmers or low-fat options that are lower in kilojoules. There, having a controlled portion is a good thing. But if they've got a portion that's huge and is about two-thirds bigger than you need, and you just go, well, this is one portion, so I'm going to eat the whole lot, it gives you a cue to overeat. So the portions are really, really important. And one of the guidelines in the book by Gabby and Celine is that they recommend that you limit the portion to no more than 250 grams of the food. And I must say that most of the dishes that I looked at were more than 250. They were at least 300 or 350 grams of food.
I guess it gets tricky because, I mean, if you're mixing the macaroni with the vegetables, they wouldn't be able to put that all into one because each one has different heating times and different ways of being prepared.
You'll be amazed the amount of technology that goes into it. So all of this food preparation that gets done, they use health checks in the way to make sure that there isn't bacterial contamination. You're actually the likelihood of getting sick from food that we eat that is produced for places like Pick and Pay Spa or Woolworths is much lower than if we were eating something from a restaurant or a catered event.
Wow.
Because it is such a controlled environment and they've got all these checks and balances in place. So from that perspective, there's a lot of technology that goes into those foods. They also, unfortunately, tend to use much more sugar, salt, and fat than we would have used at home. And that's why making food at home ourselves is the first choice, because you can control that. We also get to choose the ingredients that go in. So maybe you're someone who likes to eat free-range chicken and healthy stuff, but when you are buying a lasagna or something like that, you're not necessarily going to get the free range or best choice. You're getting the cheapest stuff that they could get, potentially.
I mean, how much, you know, more dangerous does it get when, because this is also food that has to sit on a shelf for a little bit longer than something that was fresh. And there's a lot of talk at the moment around, you know, how they get a chicken to be frozen for as long as what it is. And then, you know, the defrosting process and everything. I mean, in terms of pre-prepared meals and that kind of stuff, stuff that lives in freezers for a really long time, are there any concerns one should have in that space?
Well, there's a lot of safety built in. The reason they use sugar, salt, and not fat as much, but the sugar and salt both reduce bacterial activity inside the food. So they act as a preservative. Then they also use preservatives. And as long as the food is kept cold and frozen, so when you take it from the shop, you put it straight away into a freezer and you use it within the time that they recommend, then it's fine.
Okay.
It's designed to be that way. They've used technology to make sure it is that way. But if you defrost something that you had bought frozen and then refreeze it and then take it out and you don't know how long it stands out, the risk of bacterial contamination or at least growth and spoilage increases. But if there was no bacteria in there to start, the likelihood that it's suddenly going to explode with germs is much less likely. So just handle things the way you are instructed, according to the instructions on the back of the package, and you should be fine.
Is there any way to get around not reading the label or fully understanding the label? Because also these labels, sometimes the way that, I mean, they recommend a daily allowance and the percentage of this, and sometimes if something's 40 grams, they'll give you what it is for the 100 grams, and you've got to work backwards, and it just becomes a mission.
So with a lot of the ready foods, you will find that the serving is, if you just look at that label, that is the amount that you're getting in that little tray or pot or whatever it is.
And then you take that against the diagram that you tweeted out, which is like however many kilojoules and then however many grams of fat. Okay, cool,
If you don't want to do that, the best choice is to make food yourself. Okay. The reason really is that there are some really surprising things. I mean, there are places where you've got a bacon and crispy, I don't know what, sandwich that is lower in energy than the vegetarian versions. And ordinarily, I would say, choose a vegetarian dish because they tend to be lower in energy. But when we start adding lots of oils and nuts and seeds and crispy onion bits and things like that, then suddenly something that could have been really light and healthy becomes much higher in energy. And so you can use common sense and say the portion looks small, there's a lot of vegetables in there, and kind of work from, is this a better choice or not? But if you really want to know, check the label. And yeah, the truth is, once you've checked it once, you know whether that's a go or no. So it'll be easy enough to go, I'm scratching that one off the list. Or you'll be surprised that some of them are actually good options.
Just remind me again, what happens if you go and have a meal that is 4,000 kilojoules and the recommended daily and the recommended meal allowance is like 2,200? Because it's also about, you know, figuring out your body. You can also gauge from how it responds, and you slowly learn on a sort of subconscious level that, oh, after having that, that must have been very high in kilojoules because now I'm tired as hell.
So what you're talking about is a food coma, or I call it a food coma, and that happens when you eat way too much carbohydrates and your blood sugar goes up really, really high, and then your body produces a massive spike of insulin to help move that down, and people often in that time feel tired and a little bit lethargic, just slow because all their energy is going towards the digestive system.
After the McFeast Royale. Yeah, okay.
<My word>.
No, it is, yeah.
So at that time, you are noticing a change in your blood sugar levels. But let's say you get it all just from fat. You might feel that, wow, that was quite a rich diet. The best way to suss it out is to notice how you're feeling at the time. Don't eat past your level of satiety. If you go, I've had enough, even though there's a bit left over, just leave it behind. And then, of course, watch your weight.
I mean, yeah, can one get around not cooking? Like, if we're really being honest here. And also, how much would you have to spend to do that? Because I know there's a lot of, I use FitChef for meals and that. There's a lot of services where they'll just give you your meals. So, I mean, I feel like I can get around the cooking, but I still really enjoy, like, cooked food.
So, with things like FitChef, there they use frozen food, and some people wouldn't want to do that. There are some places that do kind of fresh stuff that's vacuum packed, and other places where they'll do completely fresh. So I have recommended for some people that they use those kind of services. But also, you can do things like, for example, choose a rotisserie chicken, take the skin off, and then just get like a veggie salad, so one that doesn't have cheese and bacon bits and onion bits and seeds and nuts in, and then just make your own dressing. So it's like, how far are you talking about not cooking? Can you pick something up that's vaguely healthy? So, for example, if you're not into rotisserie chicken or you've done it too much, you could look at, say, some fish portions, whether it's a trout fillet or a smoked mackerel fillet, or you can buy ready poached fish, that kind of thing, where you choose a few options. And then they, really, a lot of people chop up veggies for us. We can just steam them ourselves, and then you can even put like a little bit of salad dressing or some mustard and lemon juice, just a small dressing so that you don't die of boredom. And to me, that's not really cooking. So just picking up
mixing it around a little.
Otherwise, you're going to die of boredom. And the truth is also, if you don't eat a varied diet, so different kinds of proteins and veggies and fats and carbohydrates, if you're eating the same thing every single day, you're going to be getting the same nutrients every single day.
Oh, shit.
And the likelihood is that you're actually over time going to develop a nutrient deficiency, because you're basically copying and pasting the exact same nutrient intake every single day, and we don't want that.
Producer Kat, you've got a question for Nat Matchout. What is it?
Okay, so, sorry, hold on.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so we know that brown wild rice is healthier than white rice, and quinoa is healthier than rice, right? And pap. But brown rice, brown wild rice and quinoa are very expensive. Quinoa is like 100 and something rand for a packet.
Yeah, no, it's very expensive.
So if you want to spend on quinoa and brown wild rice, but you don't want to eat normal white rice or pap, what do you do?
So you could use corn, for example.
Like sweet corn.
Like sweet corn.
Okay.
Or what you can do is actually just take white rice and add lentils to it, like we see people doing. And what that does is it adds, the lentils add a little bit of fiber and protein, and that helps to slow down the digestion of the white rice. And if we're eating things like pap, the most important thing is to keep the portion controlled and then always pair it with some protein or some fat. So that also helps to slow down the digestion. So if we cannot make a healthy option or a healthy choice, sometimes you've got to pair it with something that will help slow down the digestion and always control portions of healthy foods and less healthy foods.
Mm. So white rice is not bad food. Like, it's not going to kill you.
Your arms and legs won't fall off.
Yeah. And one more question. How often should we, or how often are you allowed to eat pasta? Like, I know it's a very heavy meal, pasta. Mm-hmm.
So just control your portion size. And if you want to have it once a week, that's fine. But think of the Italians. They actually eat it really often.
Yeah, and they're skinny people.
It's just about managing your total portion and the rest of the day. So don't have a huge bowl of breakfast cereal and a huge bowl of pasta at lunchtime. Just try and mix it up so that you've still got space for veggies.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, all Producer Cat does is moan about quinoa and how expensive it is.
I don't eat a lot of quinoa at home. It is too expensive. I agree.
That and avocados.
But buy them when they're in season.
Okay.
Then they're delicious and they're more affordable.
Boom. There you go. Now you know what to do about your avocados. Okay, this has been really informative. Very quickly, because we've got about a minute, I want to just super quickly run through the meals to just avoid.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, pasta salad, just because they add mayonnaise does not mean it's a salad, and there's often not enough veggies in there. Then also sandwiches, believe it or not, the filling makes a massive difference. So read, if you're going to read something, read the label of your sandwich. And then curries in general, steer clear. They are about, some of them have as much as 2 meals worth of energy, like it's 2 meals in
really?
One little pot.
Even if you like give a tiny little serving?
It's mainly the fat inside the sauces that make it so high in energy.
These sauces are such assholes. They just really are. They really are. You know, they come across so insignificant, and then you start dissecting it, and they're out to get
you. Where all the hidden oils and fats and things are. So those dressings and oils really add up quickly.
Okay. And you should totally go for these meals. What are they?
I love fresh soup. You can actually, it doesn't contain a lot of protein, so add either some beans or some chicken or something to it, just to make it a bit more filling. I mentioned rotisserie chicken already. Take the skin off. Eat a reasonable portion. Ready-made fish portions as well are great. And if you really could not be asked to check the menu, the label, sometimes the vegetarian options, like a vegetarian bean dish, is quite good. And sushi can be good, but you've got to go easy on the portion. No more than 9 pieces of sushi.
Is it the rice that'll screw you over with the sushi?
The rice, the avo, the mayo. It's also very dense. So if you can have some salad with it, at least you'll be chomping and chewing, and you'll fill up your tummy. But the actual act of making sushi, they compress the food, and so it's quite high in kilojoules.
Wow, that's a good thing to note, because sometimes the sushi will arrive and I'll say, geez, I definitely need more, but I'm not thinking about how it's been compressed into that small space. Mm. Okay. All right, that's some powerful information there from a Nat Match. She hangs out once a month to, well, not make us feel bad. It's all for the benefit of everyone overall.
But and you're looking healthy for it.
Screw you, sauces. We're so done with you. This is the year of no more sauces. I denounce you, All Gold. All right. How do we keep up all day? It's just at NatMat on Twitter, right?
At NatMat on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook if you're there.
Fantastic. And I love this graphic that you've tweeted out, at NatMat on Twitter. If you're a dude, 1,800 to 2,200 kilojoules per meal. And if you're a lady, let me just open up the educational material here, 1,500 to 1,800 kilojoules, but then you've got to make sure that the balance of the fat, the carbohydrates, the protein, and the fiber is all right in that space.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. NatMat's back to school us in a month from now. Thank you so much for hanging out.
Thanks for having me. Nick Hellman on CliffCentral.com.